So we're about to head into Rosh Hashanah. We're a few weeks away, and we've certainly started. I know we've all started thinking about our plans for the Yamim Noraim. And I think that as we think about Rosh Hashanah, although clearly Rosh Hashanah is it's a Yom HaDin, it's there, it's a day which commemorates the creation of the world. At the end of the day, the biblical motif that is probably most ubiquitous throughout both the liturgy and the ritual of Rosh Hashanah would be Akedat Yitzchak, the sacrifice or the binding of Isaac. It appears really everywhere if you think about it. Clearly, the first place that Rosh Hashanah, where we conjure this image of Akedat Yitzchak is in the shofar itself, the shofar which is the central symbol, the central ceremonial object of Rosh Hashanah is supposed to remind us of the ram, the ram's horn, right, that was sacrificed in place of Yitzchak. And we also know that as we head into the liturgy of Rosh Hashanah, it's really everywhere. So this comes from the Musaf Amidah on Rosh Hashanah. We say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we ask him that just like the kindness and oath which you swore to our father Avraham on Har HaMoriah, let there appear before you the binding with which our father Avraham bound his son Yitzchak upon the altar. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to remember this seminal moment in history, at this moment of the binding of Isaac. We say it again at the end of the paragraph, and the binding of Yitzchak on behalf of his descendants, may you remember it today with compassion. The Torah reading itself, right, is actually on both days seems to be intended at getting us towards the Akedat Yitzchak. The first day speaks about the birth, as we know, the miraculous birth of Yitzchak, of Isaac, to Avraham and Sarah in their old age. And then before you see the reading for the second day of Rosh Hashanah, which is the actual description, the biblical account of Akedat Yitzchak. It begins with this description of God putting Avraham to the test, right? And then we know the story that unfolds, verse 2, and he said, take your son, your favorite one, Isaac, whom you love, go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the heights that I will point to you. And so we know how the story unfolds. So everywhere you look on Rosh Hashanah is this story of Akedat Yitzchak, of the binding of Isaac. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, The story of Akedat Yitzchak is one that has captivated me, troubled me, challenged me since I'm a young man, really since I can remember. And we all know it's filled with challenges. It's filled with questions, theological questions, moral questions. How can it be that God asks Avraham to do such a thing? Is Avraham right in following the voice of God to kill his own child? Is that actually what God intended? Did he intend for him to actually kill Yitzchak or not? Right? All of these stories, all of these questions are ones that come along with the story of Akedat Yitzchak. But my intent today is actually not to focus on the moral, theological questions, although they are quite significant, but to focus on a slightly different point, and that is as follows. Let's say we come to terms with the big questions of Akedat Yitzchak, and we get it. We understand that this was an incredible act, right, of self-control, of self-discipline, of commitment to God, of devotion on Avraham's part. Once I get to that point in my understanding of Akedat Yitzchak, a new question or a new problem emerges for me, and that is the test of Avraham during Akedat Yitzchak becomes something that for me is almost, it's almost unreachable. It's so superhuman in what Avraham is able to do, to take a child who he spent his life waiting for, whom he loved more than anything in the world, and to overcome all of that for his love of God, for his commitment to God. It seems just so beyond the reach of any human being that I have trouble relating to it. And then comes Rosh Hashanah, and it's everywhere, and it's a challenge for me. It's a challenge for something so superhuman, so beyond anything I could ever imagine, not just me, but anyone like me ever doing, that it's hard for it to sort of creep in and have kind of the inspirational effect that I think it's intended to have. And so what I want to do with you today is share with you a reading and understanding of Akedat Yitzchak that, at least for me, makes it actually a little bit more within reach, makes it something that speaks to me and that inspires me a bit more than the way I had traditionally read it and traditionally understood it. But to get there, we are going to start in the world of art, and we're going to look at the ways in which Akedat Yitzchak has been depicted over time, and that will give us an entree to come back to our Masorah, to our Jewish sources, and see what these illustrations, these artistic renditions of this story can help us see and understand and perhaps reimagine pieces of our own tradition that we perhaps had not seen or realized before. Just as Akedat Yitzchak is an incredibly popular story within our tradition, within our learning and study, so too it has been one of the most illustrated biblical scenes over the course of history. And I want to make it clear, I am no art historian. I am trained as a historian, but I am not an art historian. I am not an artist, but I'm a rabbi and I'm an historian. So I'm going to look at these images together with you with my rabbi hat on and maybe a little bit of my historian's hat on. So I apologize if in the crowd today there are art historians, and if I'm making terrible mistakes, please, I ask your mechila ahead of time. Right? Please understand that this is, I don't come at this from the perspective of one with expertise in the artistic realm, but rather I come at it as a tool to help me understand our Masorah, our tradition, what it has to say about Akedat Yitzchak. So we're going to look at a series of images over the course of a good thousand years. And as we do, I want us to ask a certain set of questions each time we look at a rendition of, a artistic rendition of Akedat Yitzchak. Because every time an artist takes a biblical scene and translates it onto the canvas, or as we'll see, the first weren't even on canvas, but as they make an image, a visual image of this, the artist is also engaged in the act of interpretation. They are going to fill in certain details. They are going to put in certain perspectives that they imagine were there. It's the way they saw the story unfold, which isn't necessarily the only way to read the text or the only way to see the story. So these are the following elements that I want us to pay attention to, right, as we begin looking at these pictures. So the first is the age of Yitzchak. How old is he? Right? What is the artist understanding? Because the text doesn't tell us exactly how old Yitzchak is. Number two, I want you to try and decipher, and we won't be able to see from all of the pictures, but from some of them we will, is what is Avraham feeling at the moment of Akedat Yitzchak? How is it affecting him emotionally? Here too, the text is silent. It doesn't tell us what this feels like, right? But the artist is going to tell us something, right? If you're going to draw a face, you're going to put something on that face, right? Which is likely going to indicate some set of emotions. So let's look at the emotion of Avram. Let's also look at the emotion of Yitzchak. What is Yitzchak feeling as the Akedah unfolds? Right? Number four, this is more of a technical thing. Let's look at the position of Yitzchak physically. Where is he? What is his, how is his body, right, positioned during the Akedah? Right? And number five, let's look at the position of Avraham, right, in the course of the act as well. Right? So we'll come back to those. But here is the earliest visual depiction of Akedat Yitzchak that I know of, and it comes from the 6th century of the Common Era. And as I said, this one was not on canvas. This is a mosaic found in the Beit Alpha synagogue near Beit She'an. And you can see the artist here was actually good enough not only to draw the Akedah for us, but to give us captions also so that we know exactly who is who, right? If you can see here, it's labeled Avraham in case you didn't know that the guy with the sword was going to be Avraham, right? And here's Yitzchak, right? And here, the Hineh Ail, which is interesting, right? That's the description of the ram, and Al Tishlach, that's the words of Hashem talking to Avraham. So let's do this. We're a little bit farther zoomed in on our picture, and let's ask ourselves these questions. So how old is Yitzchak in this picture? And we can you can unmute if you want to answer. Go ahead. Let's do it that way. How old would you say Yitzchak is? Somebody jump in.
Five. Less than six.
Okay. Less than six. He's a little kid. Right? He's a little kid. good. Now, just out of curiosity, now I can't see most of you, but I wonder, right, how many of us that is actually the vision that we had, right, of Akedat Yitzchak. Are we thinking, right, a child 5-6 years old? Right, I see some people shaking their heads. I think for many of us, he's, right, somebody, by the way, I can see the chat. So somebody said, oh, you know, he looks 11, he looks like a baby, but you thought he was, he was more like in his 30s. Okay, good. So this artist is definitely taking an approach that Yitzchak was a small child at the time. Any emotion that appears either to Avraham or to Yitzchak in this picture? It's a hard one.
I think Avraham looks very sad.
Okay, interesting.
Had a tear on Avraham's face?
Oh, that is a good question. This over here?
Or is that a droopy eyeball?
I don't know.
No, I think it's a tear.
That is really interesting. I never noticed that before. That may very well be. Okay, good. Let's hold
stunned,
that thought.
Stunned or dazed.
Okay, good.
Right. And how about, is looking away from Avraham, so it looks like he's avoiding eye contact.
Oh, and what is he looking at? Can we tell?
Is that in his bear?
It went into
fire.
All right, maybe he's looking at the fire. Okay, good. Any emotion on Yitzchak's face?
Fear.
He's scared.
All right. Some people say fear. Okay. Excellent. Interesting. Okay.
I would say shock.
All right. Very good.
Say, get me out of here.
I see Yitzchak's upset, pushing away, frightened, conflicted, terror. Okay. The figure of the angel is strange. The angel is intentionally not depicted. Right, which is has strong roots in our Masorah, not to depict divine figures. So only the hands are being shown there. Okay, good, excellent. So
this Yitzchak is looking at the Mizbeach, whereas Avraham isn't.
Okay, interesting. Right, Yitzchak looks like he's looking at where he's headed. Right, and yes, I would agree with there seems to be some fear there, but Yitzchak, Avram does not look like he's facing that way. And in this depiction, Hashem, or the Malach, the angel, is speaking to Avram from behind him, right? But Avram's still focused ahead of him, right, on the task at hand, on Yitzchak and on the Mizbeach. Okay, good. let's jump ahead then. And out of the world of Jewish art, because the world of Jewish art honestly doesn't extend that far. Once we get into the Middle Ages, there aren't so many great examples of Jewish art, which is largely a reflection of the fact that we didn't have the freedom, the time, or the capacity to engage much in the visual arts. Not that we didn't do it at all, but certainly not anything in comparison to what the Christian world was able to do and able to create. So this is a scene of Akedat Yitzchak found in the Basilica of San Vitale in Ravenna, Italy. And let's ask ourselves a similar set of questions here. So how old is Yitzchak here?
A teenager?
About 13, maybe.
Yeah. 12, 13, maybe a little bit older than in the previous one. Okay, still not 30, right?
No, not quite a teenager.
All right, so young, under 20, I see. Okay, excellent. Right, about 12, good. And let's talk about emotion. Emotion on Avram's face?
I think he's distracted by Hashem or the angel, whatever.
Okay, distracted. Does he seem terribly bothered? Is he upset?
Seems submissive.
Submissive? Okay, that's a good word. I like that.
Almost serene.
Somebody says no emotion on either face here. Or dispassionate.
I would say he's determined.
Determined, interesting. Okay, that's a good thought. Let's hold that
he's
one.
He's looking for instruction.
All right. But so he's kind of focused on God, right? Like he's
attentive.
Attentive. Okay. Great. And what about Yitzchak?
Accepting.
Accepting. Okay. I definitely think that word submissive, right? Would be accurate. Somebody on the chat wrote resigned. Okay. Good. Like in the previous one, you know, people had said things like fear, terror. Do you see that here?
No.
And what's his position? What's Yitzchak doing in this picture?
Leaning toward the knife.
That's right. Okay, you know, to borrow a contemporary phrase, he's leaning in, right? He is like, yeah, here I am, right? Let's go ahead. Right?
He's compliant.
It's hard to tell whether he's leaning in or whether that's Avraham's head and he's actually pulling back. Mm-hmm.
That he may be pulling back and Avraham is pulling him forward?
Yeah.
Okay, potentially. Let me ask you something else. We refer, in our Masorah, we refer to this scene as what? What do we call this?
Akedah.
The Akedah. Akedat Yitzchak. And Akedah means?
Binding.
Okay, good. Is Yitzchak bound?
Well, his hands are in the back, so he may have been.
So his hands seem to be bound. What is the purpose of binding?
Restraint.
Restraint. Okay.
Prevent him from moving.
To prevent him from moving. All right. So in this picture, can Yitzchak move? I mean, what's probably the one movement that we would probably most want to prevent at this moment?
Running away.
Running away. Can Yitzchak run off of this altar?
Yes,
right? But the artist isn't terribly worried about that. Why not?
He trusts him.
For all the reasons you guys said already, right? He's obedient, he's submissive, he seems to be leaning in, he's not going anywhere.
He's restrained by Avraham's hand.
But isn't it because the artist knows the rest of the story?
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay.
The artist drew him that way to draw attention to the hand. I mean, it's, you know, you're trying to draw the readers, the viewer's attention up to the top, you know, so he's drawn at that angle along like with the things behind him. So.
And in this case, the karban is presented without being behind bushes.
Isaac is trusting his father, and his father is trusting Hashem, the sword is so far away in both paintings, so far from it's
potential destination Isaac. You know, the sword is closer to Hashem in both.
Yeah, a good point.
I don't agree. I think the sword, it looks like he's about to behead Isaac. I mean, he's guarding, he's looking at it, and you can see that it's going to go down in a sloping motion. He's about to murder Isaac.
Okay. And it's not the kind of knife you picture in the Torah. It's like this long imperial kind of sword.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
See, I see a direct line between the hand from Shamayim and the hand of Avraham, and then his other hand on his brother, on his son. Yes. Like right. One straight line.
Yep.
Yes. There's a hand reaching out from the top of this semicircle.
Right. That would be the angel, right?
I also see ram.
Sorry to cut you off, but again, we're going to have to keep moving because there's plenty more here. I do want to respond to something that was said in the chat here, that the word akedah is related to akudim, right? Found by the sheep story, and that if it refers to maybe legs, knees, or something like that, and that if there was tying, the tying would be there. I would go a little step further and say this: the tying should be there. But the tying is not there in this particular depiction.
Hello.
Right. It's not there in this particular depiction. And that's important, right? We certainly, if we didn't have any images in our minds, we were just reading the story, right? And we were thinking about binding a human being to an altar for the purposes of slaughtering them, certainly a person who was old enough to understand what was going on, this is probably not the best way, right, of making sure that kid didn't move. Right? You do more than just tie their hands behind their back. But there is an assumption here that Yitzchak's not going anywhere, that he is totally submissive to this prize, he's totally bought into the act that's about to happen. Now, it is important to know that when that the story of the binding of Isaac in Christian sources will take on all sorts of Christological significance over the course of the years, and so that the binding of Isaac is very much tied to the crucifixion, right? Both of which are seen as having happened, you know, willingly and for the sake of others and on behalf of those who, you know, who couldn't do it themselves. So there is no question, right, that's part of what we are seeing here, and whether it has roots in our tradition as well, that's something we're going to come back to in just a few minutes. But let's move on for now. Okay, this is the cathedral in Venice. In Florence. If you've never been there, it is quite extraordinary. If you've never been to Florence at all, the most of the streets in Florence are really quite narrow. You actually can't see this, from most places in the city. And then you walk into this piazza, this plaza, and this thing just emerges, and it's built out of white and green marble. It's really just something to behold. And we have halachos about how we talk about, you know, Christian architecture. Fine, we'll put that on the side for the moment. Our intent actually is not to talk about the structure itself, although keep in mind this big dome here. That's why it's known as the Duomo, for this huge dome. But actually, our interest is not on this building, but on this building that's right in front of it. That building right in front of it is known as the Baptistry. It is related to the church, but it is not a church itself. It was a structure that was used for the actual ritual of baptism. You think of it sort of as a Christian mikvah, except I don't think it had any standing water in it. I think it was used more for the liturgical pieces of the baptistry process. Why do I bring it to your attention? Because the baptistry at the Florence Cathedral has these incredible doors on it that have bronze reliefs that depict scenes from the Bible. And there's a story that goes with these doors, actually, that was a process of renovating this this building that the rulers in Florence decided that they wanted to run a contest. They wanted to have these magnificent doors with biblical scenes portrayed on them, and that they would put it out. This was at the height of the Renaissance. They would put it out to the greatest artists in Italy to compete for the honor of making the doors at the baptistry in Florence. And there were quite a number of those who submitted pieces of work in order to compete for this honor. And there were two finalists, and the two finalists were two very well-known artists of the time named Filippo Brunelleschi and Lorenzo Ghiberti. And in 1402, they decided to have kind of an art-off, you know, a final competition between the two. And in order to do so, they asked them both to create scenes of the sacrifice of Isaac. And before you are there are two entries. Interestingly, today, the binding of Isaac is not one of the biblical scenes portrayed on the baptistry. You can go, there's a museum not far from the baptistry that houses these two entries from these two artists. But this is what was used to determine who would win this competition. And the competition ultimately was won by Ghiberti, the one on your right. And now these are two pretty different depictions. And generally speaking, scholars maintain that the Ghiberti one, who won, was actually a more traditional rendition of the sacrifice of Isaac, whereas Brunelleschi took some licenses that were not very comfortable for the Christian church at the time. And for that reason, he was not selected. Now, before we go into examining these a little bit closer, just there's a fascinating postscript to this story, which is that when Brunelleschi did not win, and you know, some suggested that they wanted them to work together, but Brunelleschi was going to have none of that. He thought his was far better, right, than Ghiberti's. And when he didn't win, he promised he was never going to compete, and he was never going to be an artist anymore. He left Florence, went down to Rome, decided he would study a different field, and he actually became an architect. Fast forward several years, and the Duomo, the cathedral in Florence, remained. The dome, that huge dome that you saw, actually had remained unfinished for many, 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 many years. And they couldn't finish it. They couldn't actually figure out from an engineering perspective how to finish. There had been no dome that large built anywhere in the Western world since ancient times. And they actually, at a certain point, went back and turned to Brunelleschi, who had become this famed architect, and went to him and asked him if he would come back and build it. So he actually had the last laugh, because he did come back to Florence. He actually completed that dome. So whereas Ghiberti was known for the panels on the doors, the most magnificent part of this cathedral is actually the dome, and that belongs to Brunelleschi. But back to our story, these two depictions I see in the chat here, people have already started to look at these two different scenes. And yes, I would agree, right, that there that's on some of the descriptions here. Let's look a little bit closer. So starting with Ghiberti, right? Age of Yitzchak. So what do we see here about the age of Yitzchak?
Teens.
Sorry, he is older.
Right, more. Looks, right, his body's older. Probably a little bit better developed. Right, he seems to be in his upper teens, right, younger twenties. Good. Right, I've seen there's been conversation here already about the emotion of Avraham. What do you see on Avraham's face?
Determination.
Okay, determination. He is focused, right? He is not going to be, Right? He is not going to be deterred from this act.
He looks intensity.
Hostile. Sorry?
Intensity.
Intensity. Okay, good. Absolutely.
Right? Eye to eye contact. They're looking at each other.
Eye contact. Good, right? He is not looking away. He's not afraid. And what about on Yitzchak's face?
He looks defiant.
Not at all.
Here.
Yitzchak is not at all defiant. He's looking up to his father for confirmation.
Okay. All right. Maybe looking for him for confirmation. Did somebody say fear?
Yes, I said fear. He looks scared.
Does he?
Look at the eyes and the mouth.
Okay. I didn't see that, but I hear that. To me, it's more a kind of a similar to what we saw in the past and sort of resigned, right?
Yes, that's
resignation. He trusts his father.
Yeah, he trusts his father. It's, you know, he may not be enjoying it, or his body, and that may be Avraham pulling him back a little bit, but he doesn't seem, he seems to be to some degree at peace with what is about to happen. And now
I think the fact that one leg is forward, one knee is forward, it's almost as though he's trying to get off that altar. Otherwise, both knees would be, you know, in the same position.
That's interesting. Although it seems that he here too, I don't know that he's tied down, that his legs are necessarily tied, that they might be right in the back there. But I'm not sure that they are. But let's compare it quickly though with Brunelleschi. Right? What do you see here?
That one's horrid. I mean, Avraham looks completely crazed, angry and crazy. And he looks like he's torturing Yitzchak before he kills him. He's got his head back and in a natural position. Yitzchak looks like he's in pain. I find that a completely horrific.
It's a very, very Christian. It's a very Christian thing to show that the Jews had a lot of brutality. This is a recurring theme in Christian art.
Well,
it's violent.
This is not very Christian, right? Which is part of, at least not traditionally, which is part of why Brunelleschi lost this competition, right? Because this is not an attempt to show Jews. When the Christians are painting biblical reliefs, they're not showing Jews. They're showing early Christians. And which is why Yitzchak is traditionally shown in this very compliant, subservient manner. Going along with it in a very willing way. Here, as everybody said, he seems to be in pain. His mouth is open, right? Perhaps he's even crying out.
I think he's numbed. He's totally numbed. He can't make any sense of this.
Right. And here he does, right? Avraham does, somebody said, like holding his neck in an unnatural position. And so you said the eyes of Avraham, right? You said crazed, I think somebody said. There's something going on there, right? That's it's a little bit hard to know what it is, but what do you think he's thinking? What does he think? Who's he looking at?
The angel.
The angel, right? And what's
he's on a holy mission, and he's completely focused on this holy mission.
Well, in the previous one, we saw he was very focused. But wait, somebody say that again?
He's a little surprised that there's some intervention.
Right. He's looking at the Malach and sort of saying, right, what are you doing? Right, what are you doing? What's going on here? Right? Who are you? and what are you doing getting in the way?
Avraham looks like how they depict Moshe often.
Okay. Good. All right, let's move forward. We're forward almost 200 years, 150 years, right? And here we have another rather traditional Christian depiction. And I want to show you that Brunelleschi's rendition, which was, again, I think quite different and quite radical for the time, is not the one that was ultimately, you know, the does not become the dominant way of depicting Akedat Yitzchak. And here you see in this picture, right, that we've almost gone to an extreme here. Right? What is the emotion on Yitzchak's face here?
He looks bored.
He's like bored. Okay, right. Ah, good. Chop my head off. Okay, right.
Resignation.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is like it's a stroll in the park. It's I couldn't be happier to be here. You know, it certainly you don't see the terror. You don't see the fear. We have no idea, obviously, what's on Avraham's face because we don't see him at all. You do have, and I want to point this out. You know, if I go back a moment, also, right, the position of the angel, right, vis-a-vis Avraham. Here you have him in front of him in both of these, right, and here, right, he's turned around to see the angel behind him. Okay, let's fast forward.
In all of these depictions, Yitzchak is kneeling.
Yes, right, which also is a rather likely a Christian depiction.
He's also been made to feel comfortable. His knees are cushioned by that fabric.
Oh, interesting. Right. Okay, good. And where's the akedah in this particular? his hands aren't even tied behind his back, right? Okay, good.
The altar is behind him also. The altar is on the other side of that wall.
Correct. That's really interesting.
That's really interesting.
It also looks like the artist put the lamb there, the sed there, to distract Yitzchak. Yitzchak looks like he's getting some solace or comfort from seeing the aisle.
Yep.
This is a classic idealized painting of the Renaissance.
Yes, I mean, although this is already a little bit late, but yes.
It is a Renaissance. It's a late Renaissance.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I don't know if you have some pictures of Jewish artists. There is a tremendous difference between Jewish artists on this subject and the Christian one. If you look at Chagall or if you look at Avel Pan, you could see the pain in the father's face to do it, especially Avel Pan. I don't know if you're familiar with this. I have in my this picture. I don't know if you can see it.
We're gonna get there in just a minute. We're not gonna get to the Jewish artists, but we're going to get to the question of where those Jewish artists were coming from, right? In just a minute. Okay. Quick story, and then we're gonna continue. So I went to Italy for the first time with my wife a few years ago for our 20th anniversary. And I am a student of Rav Aharon Lichtenstein at Yeshivat Har Etzion. As you all know, he passed away several years ago, and I have a close relationship with his son, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. So I ran into Rav Moshe Lichtenstein several weeks before we were taking this trip. I knew that Rav Lichtenstein had been to Italy several times. And so I was talking to him about our upcoming trip. I was asking for some halachic advice, navigating churches and the where we could go, where we couldn't go. And then I asked him any advice, anything we should see. So he told me that his father had said that it is worth it for every Jew to go to Italy just to see Caravaggio's Akedat Yitzchak. So if he says that, you know that it has to be on the list. And someplace that I had to make sure I saw. I didn't know why. I didn't know what was about it. But clearly, right, it became something that we had to make sure that we saw. So here it is. This is Caravaggio's Akedat Yitzchak. And just by looking at it, right, you can already tell that Caravaggio has broken with much of certainly Christian tradition in terms of the way that he is depicting this particular scene. So I want to keep my eye on the clock. So let's look a little bit closer at our questions. What emotion do you see here on the eyes of Avraham?
He looks perturbed.
Okay, perturbed. Good.
He looks a little annoyed that the angel is talking to him.
Is distracting him.
Perplexed. You know, like his
questioning.
Questioning. His forehead is furrowed. If you look
good
at his
right, there's clearly
and the eyes are kind of downcast. He's not the happiest camper.
He's confused. What's happening confused. Here?
Okay. No. Confused. And obviously what draws everybody's attention to Caravaggio, right, is not so much Avraham, but it is Yitzchak.
Error.
How old is Yitzchak, by the way, here?
Probably in his 20s. No. That's a young man who is in pain and is terrified.
He looks
older than a boy. He looks older.
Okay. He looks like an adult.
Weird. I would say it's his teens.
All right. So yes, I think we have an art historian on here who said that Caravaggio is known for his graphic depictions and emotional and violent, absolutely, right? But somebody said, right, the word terror, right? Terror, I mean, it's a good way, right, of mortal fear, somebody said, right? Anger, fear, shouting for help, right? His mouth is open. There's likely something coming out of that mouth, right, at that time. And let's also go back to the question of, right, akedah, of being bound, right? How is, right, think about those other depictions where Yitzchak could have just gotten up and left, right? What's preventing him from leaving here?
His father's hand.
His father.
His father's body. Right? The Akedah is Avraham physically holding him down because he is mortally terrified, right, of what's about to happen. Now, interestingly, right, if we take this forward just a bit, right, to another very famous, right, rendition of Akedat Yitzchak, which is that of Rembrandt, just about 30 years later. Rembrandt, you know, again, I leave it to the art historians to figure out if there's any connection between Caravaggio and Rembrandt, whether one had any influence on the other. That's not my field, right? But at least thematically speaking, right, the piece of Rembrandt's painting that always strikes people is what's the most dominant piece of this image?
The exposed neck.
And also, what's right next?
Also the lettering, the head, the right, lighting.
Exactly. Oh, the lighting. Right? Rembrandt's always known for his lighting, right? But there's that hand, right?
And where is that hand?
The hand covering the face.
It's covering his face, right? So what we see here also is it seems that he's Avraham here too in Rembrandt's depiction. He's holding him down, right? And what might be under that face? What is in all likelihood under that face? Why do you think Avraham might not want to see what is on Yitzchak's face?
A terrified boy.
Right? So if that in fact is the case, right? If it's this, and if this is what's happening underneath it, then I understand why he doesn't want to see his face and he'd rather not see his face. If there's screams and yells coming out of his mouth, I understand why he would want to keep that face covered.
Or he doesn't want Yitzchak to see what he's doing.
Right.
There's also a midrash where Yitzchak is talking to him, saying, you know, who's going to take care of you in your old age? Who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? You know, who's going to feed you?
The midrash in just a minute, which is why I have to keep my eye on the time. And interestingly, Rembrandt has another Akedah depiction later in life, where you can see that the emotion on Avraham's face is quite different. If you can mute, that would be great. That the emotion on Avraham's face is quite different here. People, I think historians talk about this perhaps reflecting the difficulty that Rembrandt had in his own life. And yes, we know that Rembrandt lived amongst Jews. Dr. Soloveitchik had done quite a bit of work on that front. But you can see, so there's the angel is sort of, it's a more comforting view here. You know, he's sort of wrapping Avraham. Avraham's older in age, but you still have that depiction of his hand, right, over Yitzchak's face. So what I want to do here with the time we have left is tell you how I approach these pictures as not as an art historian, which luckily we have one here in the call, but as a rabbi. And that is, I ask myself the following question. When I see biblical depictions, I ask myself, is it Jewish? Okay. Is it Jewish? Is what is the interpretation that the artist is bringing to this scene? Right? Do they come from outside of our tradition, or are they part of ours? And here we seem to have two very different, right, depictions of this event. Right? We have Yitzhak as a child and a teen, or we have him as an older or as a young adult. We have Avram either stoic, focused, determined, or in these last pictures, certainly in Caravaggio, seemingly confused, disturbed, bothered. We have Yitzhak, who is stoic, possibly even happy, willing, right, submissive, or we have him as terrified. We have Yitzhak stretching his neck out, right, and saying, "Here I am," right? Hineni, somebody said on the chat. Or we have Yitzhak needing to be held down by his father because otherwise he'd run away. We have Avraham looking forward. And we have Avraham turned around, right, to the malach behind him. And getting back to where I started, for me, it's many of these first descriptions that are difficult for me. It's difficult for me to relate to a scene where Avraham is just stoic. He's not feeling anything. He's so committed to what he's doing that there's no question in his mind that killing his child is the right thing to do. That the image of Yitzchak as almost happy to be there and sticking out his neck, again, I will accept it. And I accept that it could very well be that way, but it's hard for me to understand or to relate to something which is on that high of a level in terms of its faith, right, and commitment. So these are the questions that are on my mind as I look at these pictures. And we have only a few minutes left together, so we're not going to get too into the text themselves. But I want to show you what emerges when we take these depictions and then we come back to our own Masorah and we perhaps see things that we haven't seen before. So how old was Yitzchak according to our Masorah? So we've seen him depicted everywhere from that first Jewish painting, right, in which he was really quite, sorry, the mosaic, in which he was really quite young, until others, those later ones, which he seemed to be a young adult. So even Ezra writes, right, that Rabbi Sein Zal Amri Shahaya Yitzchak Kasher Nekal Ben 37 Shari, right, that a rabbi says he was 37 years old. And, then the Ibn Ezra writes, right, that the imdivre kabbalah nekabel. This is Ibn Ezra's way of saying that I really don't agree with this, but we have this Masorah, and so I have to note it. He says that others say that he wasn't 37. He couldn't understand how he could be 37, says Ibn Ezra, because right, if he was 37 years old, then the story should be 100% about Avram. Sorry, about Yitzchak. Yitzchak going up on an altar at 37. He's an adult. We're putting himself, it shouldn't be about Avraham's sacrifice of Yitzchak, because Avraham's an adult. It should all be about Yitzchak and what he did. But that's not the way we tell the story.
It should be also the Nisayon, the test of Yitzchak, and not the test of Avraham.
Exactly, precisely. That's what the Ibn Ezra says. So he says, other people say he was 5 years old, similar to that, to the mosaic that we saw. But he doesn't think that was possible either, because we know that Yitzchak carries some of the wood for the Akedah. And so instead, he thinks he's somewhere closer to 13. We saw, in fact, several of the pictures depict a young teen, right, as the age in which this happened. Okay, good. So are they willing? Are we supposed to imagine a scene where there's submission, where there's where they're at peace with what they're doing, where there's a sense of comfort, right, with enacting this particular act, right? And so we certainly have that tradition in our text. So this is a famous introduction to Eicha Rabbah, in which our avos up in Shemaim see the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, and each one of them jumps before HaKadosh Baruch Hu asking for mercy on the Jewish people, and each one pleads their case, says, "I did such and such for you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu," or more precisely, "I had rachamim," right? I was kovesh, I conquered my emotions in a particular case, won't you do the same? And it begins with Avraham, and Avraham steps up before God and says that, master of the world, at 100 years of age, you gave me a son. When he became an adult and was a lad of 37, you said to me, bring him as a burnt offering, and I acted upon him with cruelty, it says, right? But I did not pity him. Rather, I myself forced him, right? I didn't have any rachmanos on him. I was able to conquer that. And then Yitzchak comes up, right? And he says, right? I didn't hesitate. I bound myself with the will of my heart upon the altar. I stretched out my neck under the knife. Right? These are our sources saying that was the position. Yitzchak was there, neck outstretched. God, Avraham, I'm willing to do it. And that's the way, right, he ought to be remembered. Rashi seems to go along these lines. Right? Rashi will look at the middle one, saying that both of them went together with the same ready heart, right? Belev shaveh. They don't seem to be hesitating. They don't seem to be scared. They don't seem to be concerned, right, about what has happened. They're totally there, right, with belev shaveh, belev shalem. That, however, is not the only tradition we have. Right? There is a different tradition that appears in our liturgy, and we've probably said it countless times and perhaps not totally thought about what exactly we were saying, and it opens a whole different door into understanding Akedat Yitzchak. The Mishnah in Tanis is talking about the Musaf for Rosh Hashanah and what brachot, how we end each of those brachot. And the opinion that you have in front of you says, Al Rishanahu Omer, Misha Anas, Avraham Bahara Moriah, Hu Yane Etchem, Vishma Bekol Tzakatchem, Ayomazah, Barachata Hashem, Goel Yisrael. How we end the first bracha of Musaf says the Mishnah, we say, we bless God who answered Avraham on Har HaMoriah, Mount Moriah. He should answer you and hear the sound of your cry on this day. And in fact, this language appears in the Slichot that we're going to start saying in just a few weeks, 2 weeks. Right? We say it at the end of Slichot. Every single time we say Slichot, both in Nusach Ashkenaz and Nusach Sfard, we say that he who answered Avraham on Har HaMoriah, he shall answer us. He who answered his son Yitzchak when he was bound upon the altar, he should answer us. What is the problem with this text? What is the implication when you say that God answered?
That they asked.
There was a prayer from both of them to be saved.
That's right. There was a prayer. They were asking for something, right? What were they asking for? They're likely asking to be saved, asking that this shouldn't happen, asking for some sort of salvation, that they shouldn't have to go through with this, which is a very different a depiction than two people who are up there, you know, sort of willingly going through with this particular act. And the truth of the matter is that there are those who have picked up with that. The Shla, right, the famous rabbi of Prague, right, writes explicitly, right, that when you examine the text carefully, he says, you'll find that both Avraham and Yitzchak made efforts to escape this particular death, as has been pointed out by the sages. And he quotes as a source text at the end, the language that I just cited from our Slichot Davening, may the one who answered Avram at Mount Moriah answer our prayers as well. It was clear to him that they were asking to get out of this, that they were not at ease or at peace with what was happening. They were going to do it because God said do it, right? But they were certainly not, right, happy, right, about having, and they wished very much that they were someplace else. I want to share with
can
you.
Can I say something? Just a second. Can I say something?
I don't have time, unfortunately. I need to finish. But let me share with you two more texts here that I think will bring these paint things back to life, and again, just add a little bit more richness to our understanding. This is the Psikta Rabati. It's a late compilation of Agadic Midrash, but let's look at it and let's see what the other details that are already in our Masorah, right, that perhaps we haven't realized before. So this is depicting a conversation on high. The Holy One, blessed be, said to the angel Michael, "What are you standing there for? Right, don't let him kill Yitzchak." So Michael begins to call out to him, right, Avraham, Avraham, and so Avraham turned his head toward Michael. So now we have that depiction, right, that orientation of Michael standing or somehow behind Avraham and Avraham turning around. And now Michael says to him, what are you doing? Don't cast your hand against the wall, right? Al tishlach yadcha al hanar. Amar lo ve'achan kenu. So I shouldn't kill him. I shouldn't kill him with a knife. What should I do? Strangle him? And Michael replies, no. Al taslo davar. Don't do anything. Al taslo meuma. Don't do anything to him. Amar lo Avram chutz mizo umizo. Hakadosh Baruch Hu amar li lekarev bni ve'ata omer lo tikrevenu. Says Avram, what? Don't kill him? But God told me to kill him. And now you're telling me not to kill him? And what emotion do we imagine is on Abraham's face at the moment?
Disbelief, confusion.
Confusion, right? Confusion, what? You're telling me no? God said yes? Which one is it? Right? Which one is it? I don't understand what you're trying to tell me. It doesn't make any sense. Says Abraham.
He does not understand what God said to him. Rabbi,
okay, there's a lack of understanding. There's a confusion. One more text. Bereshis Rabbah, and this will bring it all together. Right? Bereshis Rabbah has this incredible description. I'm going to read it in Hebrew because it is so powerful. Davar acher amar Rabbi Yitzchak b'shah shebikesh Avraham la'akod Yitzchak b'no. When Avraham was about to bind his son, la'akod et Yitzchak. Amar lo Abba. Bachur ani, v'choshishani shema yizdazeya gufi mipachada shel sakin v'atzareka, v'shema tipasel hashchita v'lo tala lecha lekorban ela kafteini yafeh. Says Yitzchak to his father, Abba, Tati, Dad, I'm just a boy, and I'm scared. I'm scared my body is going to shake from fear, uncontrollably from that knife. And so tie me up, hold me down so that I don't mess this whole thing up, right? When you try to do this, because I can't control the fear. So tie me up really well. And so Avraham does. And so you have a picture here of a young boy who is terrified. He's going to do it, but he is terrified, right? And just a little while later in that same text, you have Rabbi Acha saying Avraham started to become confused. These words are confusing. Yesterday you told me I should take it. Yesterday you told me Yitzchak was going to be my progeny was going to come from him. Now you're telling me take him and give him to you. Now you're telling me not to give him to you. Which one is it, God? I don't understand. And so we have in this text, we have the young man who is terrified. Who's terrified? Right? We have an Avraham who is confused. And I very much believe that when Rav Moshe Lichtenstein told me that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein thought everyone should see a Caravaggio, it was because Caravaggio, not because he studied Bereshit Rabbah or Pesikta Rabati, but because he was able to bring out themes which are actually very much a part of our Masorah, a depiction which is not the depiction, right, that we normally have of Akedat Yitzchak, but is actually very well documented, right, in our Masorah, a depiction which, again, to me, makes this a little bit more human. It makes it a little bit more within the realm of something I can understand and I can relate to people who are, right, who are doing the Ratzon Hashem, the will of Hashem, but that are struggling with it because of the enormity of the act. And perhaps most importantly, what this does for us is this returns the scene of Akedat Yitzchak to a scene of Tefillah, to the very text of the Slichot, Misha Anali Avraham Avinu Be'ara Moriyahu Yanenu, Misha Anali Yitzchak Beno Shenayakad Al Gabi HaMizbeach. These are depictions not just of sacrifice and commitment, but there are depictions of people who called out to God, who said, God, what is, help me. Help me through something I don't understand. Help me through a really difficult time. I need your help. And if that is what the Akedah is about, more than anything, it's about two people reaching out to God at their moment when they needed God most, then that becomes then the ubiquitous motif for Rosh Hashanah. It's not just about sacrifice, but it's about tefillah. It's about calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and ultimately, it's about HaKadosh Baruch Hu answering those tefillot. As he did, then that becomes our tefillah. Each time we listen to the shofar, each time we recall the events of Akedat Yitzchak and Rosh Hashanah, what we're saying is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, just as you listen to their tefillot, please listen and answer ours as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Purr, for that fascinating, you know, talk and pictures. If you want to, if you have a minute or two, just comment towards the end. There are a whole bunch of chats really, I guess, discussing the very modern interpretation that maybe Avraham shouldn't have listened. And, you know, that he should have argued more, which sort of, if you want to, that seems to be sort of the theme going on at the last number of chats. If you don't have to comment on that, but if you'd like to.
I just say something.
But wait, let Dr. Perro comment on that first, and we'll take questions.
Just a quick plug for next week. This is the title of next week's lecture. It's Matatio Day, The Secret Formula for Forgiveness. We'll be talking about the Yud Gimel Mida Arachamim, and also again, hopefully offering a different, slightly different perspective.
We do look forward. If you want to take a quick look at the chat, I'll just tell everybody, of course, at 1 o'clock, Rabbi Ari Shvat will be continuing the second part of Orot HaTshuvah. So everybody is welcome. Same channels, just to say here. Tonight, Parsha, 8:30 p.m., Rabbi Seth Brower, the Rosh Hashiva and head of School of Or Chaim, will be giving the Parsha Shir. I'll be giving my regular Pirkei Avot Shir tomorrow morning at 9:30. Sunday, Natty Help God on Sefer Yonah, part 2 at 10 o'clock, and Rabbi Liebtag continuing his series on Sefer Dvarim. Monday, Professor Reinhold from Revel, Dean of Revel, his talk on the philosophy of Tshuva at 11, Rebecca Winter on Tshuva in Tanakh at 1, Rabbi Adler Tuesday morning at 11 on Rav Soloveitchik's Rosh Hashanah. And Wednesday morning, Benny Gesundheit on Malchiyot Zichronot and Shofarot. And then Wednesday night, the Haftorah of the week, and back to Thursday morning next week. So I think, and Monday night, Mark Shapiro continuing his series on Shaul Lieberman. Hope got lots to keep you busy. Please invite your friends, a friend to come and join us. And I think by now, Dr. Perot probably did have a chance to take a look at all the chats, and he can comment quickly on them. Bakasha.
Yeah, unfortunately, those are the issues that I referred to at the beginning of the lecture, the deep theological, moral questions raised by the Akiva. It really requires a lecture unto itself, but certainly Rav Lichtenstein was always quick to cite Kierkegaard's Fear and Trembling, in which he develops this idea of the teleological suspension of the ethical, that it was precisely because Avraham was so moral, right, that and knew and believed in his heart of hearts this was not the right thing to do, right, but that made this the 10th and most difficult test, but that ultimately, right, the idea that teleological suspension of the ethical is that in a God-centered world, in a world where there is where we do believe that human the human capacity is intellectual capacity is at a certain is finite, right? That when there is a very clear and explicit command from God, we have to suspend, not eradicate, not delete, but suspend momentarily, right, our system of man-made ethics, right, and bow our head as a knight of faith, as Kierkegaard would call him, right, for that particular moment, right, and only for that particular moment. And we've seen a lot to say about this, and particularly how it plays out with Amalek. It's not an easy question. It really doesn't deserve a quick answer, but maybe another time.
No, I 100%. This was on the art of the Akedah and how it fits to our Masorah. I agree. We'll leave the theological questions, which will keep us here way past our allotted time. And so thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you next week, and we look forward to seeing everybody when you can come very soon. And all right, I'm going to end the meeting. We can log in back at before 1 o'clock for Rabbi Shvat on Orat HaTshuvah. Okay, thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Thank you, Rabbi Gil. Okay. Enjoy the weather.